Hello once again, my white brothers and sisters of the world. Welcome to another episode of In Klassen We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale. This program is of course sponsored by the World Church of the Creator. By the Creator we mean the beautiful white race itself, which is responsible for all that we call civilization and progress on this earth. Of course, these are considered blasphemous words in today's anti-white world. This is called hate speech by the Jews, whose holiest book, the Talmud, is a book designed to teach Jews to exploit, enslave, and even kill non-Jews. Today our topic is the current enslavement of white girls and women in Israel and other Jew-occupied countries. We will begin with an article which appeared recently at JewsWeek.com. The original source was the Washington Jewish Week. Therefore, this is news straight from a Jewish press. The headline of the article is Selling Sex in Israel. I will begin by reading from the article itself. Quote, they come to Israel from the Ukraine, Russia, and Moldova looking for freedom. Instead, they are sold as sex slaves, and you thought Israel was holy. Their names are Natalia, Oksana, or Svetlana. They come to Israel, as immigrants do, for a better life. But their dreams of working as a waitress, nurse, or au pair turn nightmarish upon their arrival. Their fellow countrymen who met them at the airport speaking the language of home takes them to a locked apartment with barred windows and a phone that only takes incoming calls where they are forced to provide sexual services to strangers. Those who rebel risk being raped, beaten, or starved. Even those who knew they were going into prostitution are shocked by the stark conditions, the pay of roughly 20 shekelim, $5 a day or less, for their labor, unquote. The article goes on to tell the tale of a young 18-year-old slave in Israel who had repeatedly tried to escape her pimp because, quote, I just wanted to go home, unquote. Again, all this information appeared in Washington Jewish Week. This particular article is archived at www.jeffsarchive.com in the Palestine section. I will continue to quote, few pimps involved in trafficking ever face a judge. Out of 459 women deported in 1998, only 35 cases went to trial. Out of 253 in 1999, a scant 5 ended up in the courtroom. Judicial indifference is compounded by police complicity. And more from the article. The 18-year-old Moldovan, it turned out, in one point in her misadventures, found herself in a Tel Aviv police station where some of the officers, who were her clients, recognized her and moved to call her pimp. Overhearing their plans, the woman fled and moved in with a client-turned-boyfriend. But somehow the pimp found her again and threatened the boyfriend. The woman, with no place to go, went back to the brothel. Now the case hangs before the courts, where she has faint hope for a positive outcome. The police role in such trafficking ranges from casual to serious, she alleged. There are police who just come as clients, those who get special discounts because of their good relationships with the owner of the place, and those that inform the owner about police operations, she explained. So this is what is occurring within the blood-stained borders of our noble little ally, Israel? Is this why millions of white people died defending Jewish interests in World War II, so that Israel could become the center of operations for the Jewish-run white slave trade? The March 8, 2001 Sydney Morning Herald ran an article entitled Ticket to Nowhere on the subject of the sex trade as well. This article corroborates the assertion that the Israeli legal system is corrupt. Here's a direct quote. Israel had no specific laws against trafficking until June last year, when the Knesset approved legislation making trafficking illegal and punishable by jail terms of up to 17 years. But Wise Rentz says prosecutors and judges are not using their new clout. Quote, we don't see any big action in this area. Judges aren't behaving differently, handing down light sentences. The networks and pimps just go back and import more women to Israel, unquote. So, after years of pressure by human rights groups such as Amnesty International, Israel finally gets around to making trafficking the goyim illegal, but de facto nothing changes. White women and girls are still enslaved. The Jewish mafia gets richer, and Jews and Arabs continue to rape white women with virtual impunity. How can the Jews tolerate this? Prostitution itself is a debatable issue in the 21st century, but literal enslavement of women and girls? By shining light on their holy book, so-called, we shall shortly examine what the Jews really think about the goyim. Goyim is a word which means cattle. It is a word that they use to refer to all non-Jews, though international Jewry has specifically targeted the white race for exploitation and extinction. This is because the white race is the only race which has proven itself historically capable of resisting and defeating the Jews. This is why Jews especially enjoy raping white women for sport and profit. An estimated 50,000 women from the former Soviet Union are trafficked abroad every year and forced into sexual slavery. In Israel alone, there are more than 200 brothels, 200 sex clubs, an unknown number of firms providing enslaved girls and women. Now, the white person hearing of this, white girls and women, may be quite shocked. The naive listener's post-shock responses, if he or she has any healthy concerns for the white race whatsoever, might be a series of additional questions. Where are the massive feminists on this issue? Where are the front page headlines condemning Israel? Sure, we can locate a few rare articles here and there, but where is the huge media outcry that logically should result? Where is the gallant and chivalrous George Bush and the rest of our government? After all, the U.S. supports Israel to the tune of billions of dollars per year. Aren't we taught that the United States is the great defender of human rights? Perhaps you remember the Jewish-controlled U.S. media campaign, which relentlessly and repeatedly attacked South Africa simply because it once had the good sense to attempt to keep whites and blacks separated? Perhaps you recall Christian preachers telling their sheeple that Jesus was angry at them because they tolerated apartheid in South Africa. Well, the South Africans weren't enslaving blacks, nor were they creating a worldwide industry which sought to profit from destroying poor, naive girls' lives by repeatedly raping, beating, and selling them. To understand why the USA and the major media outlets have been relatively silent on this issue, one must first understand Jewish supremacism itself. One must first accept the clear fact that the Jews have taken control of our media outlets and even our very government. As far as researching Jewish control, I will refer the listener to a rare Jewish rebel, Benjamin Friedman. He was a wealthy industrialist who had direct contact with several U.S. presidents. In his book, he writes about seven masters of deception: Presidents Wilson, FDR, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon. His book is called Hidden Tyranny. These men sold out America, if you can call them men, to powerful Zionists. Benjamin Friedman names names and discusses how Talmudist Jewish supremacists control the mass media. Jewish supremacism itself can be understood by going directly to the Bible itself, the Talmud, Judaism's holiest book, so-called, and even to the works of rare contemporary Jewish rebels who spell it out for us. Judaism is nothing more than a front operation for organized crime. More specifically, crimes committed against non-Jews in the name of Judaism. The Jews consider themselves to be the chosen ones. Their word for non-Jews is goyim, which means cattle. We will begin with the Bible itself. Deuteronomy 20:10. When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. And it shall be, if it make thee answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. And if it make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thine hands, thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women, and the little ones, and the cattle, and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, thou shalt take unto thyself, and thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. But of the cities of these people, which the Lord thy God doth give thee for an inheritance, thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth." Unquote. That was Deuteronomy 20:10 from the Jewish Bible. Basically, it tells Jews that the best way to take a city and turn all of the non-Jews into servants and slaves is to proclaim peace. This so-called holy scripture also tells Jews what to do with people who will not willingly become servants and slaves to the Jews. Simply kill these wretched Goyim warriors and carry away their women, children, cattle, and belongings. Of course, the Jewish elites, who are currently enslaving white nations, are opting for a more insidious approach. The Jews who would enslave us, and are enslaving us, have known for some time that the best way to control so-called democratic countries is to gain control of the media. They know, and have known, that the best way to manipulate the people into aiding and abetting in their own enslavement and eventual destruction is to gain control of the newspapers, publishing houses, television stations, and movie studios. I will shortly reveal a very telling quote by Jew Moritz Goldstein, which reveals just how aware Jews are that control of the media is the key to control of the Goyim. First, a little background information to put this quote in its proper historical context, then the damning quote itself. Germans' awareness of Jewish influence was quietly discussed but not publicly debated in the press until 1913, after Moritz Goldstein, a Jewish writer, published an essay entitled "German Jewish Parnassus." His article created a national stir at that time by asserting that while Jews were excluded from full participation in German culture, they were actually directing it. A brazen admission, but a painful truth made more real for the German people after their losses in World War I, and who came both to lament the decline of traditional German life and resent the ongoing social upheavals from bad economic conditions and burgeoning ghetto populations that Jews appear to foment. Now, here's the quote from Jew Moritz Goldstein, quote, "Who controls the news media rules the mind." Let me say that again. "Who controls the news media rules the mind. Who controls the entertainment industry rules the heart. Who controls both rules the commonwealth." Unquote. Should any listeners have any doubts that the Jews do control our media, I will now refer those listeners to www.creator.org, specifically the link entitled "Facts That the Government and Media Don't Want You to Know." Because the Jews have gained control of our news media, they are able to decide in most cases what news gets covered, which stories receive front page attention, and which stories are replayed and repeated over and over to make a lasting impression on the people. By controlling the minds of our people, they are also able to control our votes. By gaining control of our entertainment industry, the Jews are able to decide which images to burn into our people's hearts. In the films coming out of Hollywood, or Kosher Valley as it's commonly called, how do the Jews portray racially conscious people? They are portrayed as uneducated, violent, and hateful Neanderthals who live in trailers. Now, there is even a partial truth in this, only in that it is poor whites who are most seriously impacted by the flood of non-whites taking away jobs, etc., from whites. But people who care about their race, which is to say their extended family, are anything but stupid. We are our people. The fate of any one of us is inextricably tied up with the fate of our extended family. This should go without saying, but in today's Jew-dominated world, our people have to be reminded of these basic truths. Why is that? Because the Jews have in fact used their media control to get many of us to accept false versions of reality and history. How do they portray World War II, for example, in their films? Those evil Nazis oppressing those poor, innocent, violin-playing Jews. Do you think Steven Spielberg, though, will ever make a film about the 20 to 30 million whites who perished under Jewish communism? Do you think any big-time Hollywood director will ever make a film about the Jewish-run white slave trade, specializing in Polish girls, the center of which was Oswiecim? The German name for this town, ironically enough, was Auschwitz. Has any Jewish filmmaker ever honestly portrayed the Allied firebombing of the civilian population of Dresden, Germany? Do you think Steven Spielberg or any other kosher director will make a film about the white slave trade in Israel? Do you seriously think Holly Weird will show scenes of white girls, many underage, choking back tears as they describe their ordeals, as they describe the rapes and beatings, and the Israeli police laughing at them as they sought help? The Old Testament, from which I quoted moments ago, was written to unify the Jews and give them a plan for conquest and control. The New Testament was written to convince non-Jews, specifically the Romans of the time, to turn the other cheek and resist not evil. We, the enlightened and proud members of the white race, must do the opposite. We must indeed resist the evils committed against our people. We must resist all who endeavor to exploit, enslave, or destroy outright the creative and beautiful members of our noble race. Now, in order to further understand why our people are being enslaved both psychologically and bodily, let's turn our attention to what has been called Judaism's holiest book, the Talmud. Specifically, since our topic today is the white slave trade in Israel, we will look at what the Talmud has to say about how Jews should regard non-Jewish women and even children. The following excerpts are from the book entitled Jewish History, Jewish Religion, The Weight of 3,000 Years. This book was not written by Adolf Hitler, who did, by the way, mention the Jewish-run white slave trade in Mein Kampf. The following words are from Jewish History, Jewish Religion, a book written by Israel Shahak, a rare Jewish rebel, professor, and Belsen survivor, so-called. He believed that the best way to prevent another backlash or justice against the Jews would be to get them to change their ways. We will begin with page 36 of the paperback version. Quote, "Let us start with the Decalogue itself. The eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal, is taken to be a prohibition against stealing, that is, kidnapping, a Jewish person. The reason is that, according to the Talmud, all acts forbidden by the Decalogue are capital offenses. Stealing property is not a capital offense, while kidnapping of Gentiles by Jews is allowed by Talmudic law." Hence the interpretation. Let's go now to page 87 in the paperback version of Shahak's book. Quote, "Sexual intercourse between a married Jewish woman and any man other than her husband is a capital offense for both parties, and one of the three most heinous sins. The status of Gentile, non-Jewish women is very different. The Halakhah presumes all Gentiles to be utterly promiscuous, and the verse, whose flesh is as the flesh of asses, and whose issue is like the issue of horses, is applied to them. Whether a Gentile woman is married or not makes no difference, since as far as Jews are concerned, the very concept of matrimony does not apply to Gentiles. As they say, quote, there is no matrimony for a heathen, unquote. Therefore, the concept of adultery does not apply to intercourse between a Jewish man and a Gentile woman, unquote. That is directly from his book, once again. This does not mean that sexual intercourse between a Jewish man and a Gentile woman is permitted. Quite the contrary. But the main punishment is inflicted on the Gentile woman. She must be executed, even if she was raped by the Jew. Quote, if a Jew has coitus with a Gentile woman, whether she be a child of three or an adult, whether married or unmarried, and even if he is a minor aged only 9 years and 1 day, because he had willing coitus with her, she must be killed, as is the case with a beast, because through her a Jew got into trouble, unquote. And I continue to quote from Shahak's book, quote, all Gentile women are presumed to be prostitutes, unquote. That was from chapter 5, The Laws Against Non-Jews. I will offer here another quote, quote, Maimonides allowed Jews in the name of the Jewish religion to abduct Gentile children into slavery, and his opinion was no doubt acted upon by contemporary practice, unquote. Keep in mind that many of the women who are slaves in Israel today aren't really even women at all, not yet. They would be considered underage children by current laws prevailing in the United States today. Remember, the Talmud is Judaism's holiest book, and yet it says such filth. By considering these and many other quotes from the Talmud, we can more easily understand why the Jews, with few exceptions, are perfectly willing to allow the white slave trade to flourish within their very borders. I would now refer the skeptical listener to a politically correct site which sheds much light on the Talmud. It can be accessed at www.truthbeknown.com. Punch Talmud in the search engine, and you can further study this most unholy of so-called holy books. Here are a few additional Talmudic quotes from truthbeknown.com. Quote, to communicate anything to a goy about our religious relations would be equal to the killing of all Jews, for if the goyim knew what we teach about them, they would kill us openly, unquote. Quote, a Jew should make a false oath when the goyim asks if our books contain anything against them, unquote. Well, so much for asking your friendly neighborhood rabbi about the Talmud. To properly understand the plight of the white slave trade victim trapped in an Israeli brothel today, I must read for you now one more Talmudic quote. Quote, a Jew may do to a non-Jewess what he can do. He may treat her as he treats a piece... Let me say this again. A Jew may do to a non-Jewess what he can do. He may treat her as he treats a piece of meat, unquote. Many in the so-called politically correct crowd will try to minimize or even laugh off these quotes, but if you think modern Jews have given up the Talmud, you are mistaken. The following is a direct quote from Hermann Welk from his book entitled The Talmud, Heart's Blood of the Jewish Faith. Quote, the Talmud is to this day the circulating heart's blood of the Jewish religion. Whatever laws, customs, or ceremonies we observe, whether we are Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, or merely spasmodic sentimentalists, we follow the Talmud. It is our common law, unquote. Israel Shahak, in his book Jewish History, Jewish Religion, goes into some depth as to the specific tactics employed by Jews to hide the contents of the Talmud from prying Gentile eyes. Sometimes the Jews merely bribed Christian authorities to overlook the Talmud, but throughout the Middle Ages there were prohibitions and burnings of Talmudic literature by outraged popes and bishops. Eventually, the Jews devised a clever system of double bookkeeping to keep the anti-goy hatred in their Talmud hidden. They simply modified or deleted the offending passages from new editions of the Talmud. Then they made up a separate collection or compendium containing all of the passages which had been edited out. And what did they do with this collection of passages which reveal their burning hatred of and plans to enslave non-Jews? Did they throw it away because it was hate literature? Did they enact speech crime laws to prevent such passages from ever finding their way back into their precious Talmud again? Far from it, but brothers and sisters. This separate compendium circulated secretly among the rabbis. In Israel today, feeling cocky and confident enough to dispense with such deceptions, the Jews are putting the passages which formerly had been omitted or modified back into the latest editions of the Talmud in their original form. They are still careful with translations into Gentile or non-Jewish languages, however, as Professor Shahak tells us in his book. Just as the Jews are confident enough to leave all the anti-Goyim hate in their Hebrew Talmuds now, they are also confident enough to let the occasional article written by a naive feminist regarding the current massive white slave trade in Israel to be printed. However, it is important to repeat that they are never 100% honest in these stories. One classic trick they employ is to call the mafia involved in trafficking these women the Russian Mafia. The so-called Russian mafia is run by Jews. Jews whose complete ruthlessness and disregard for the rights of these women and girls can only be fully understood by understanding the so-called holiest book of Judaism, the Talmud. When debating anti-whites on this issue, remember to refer them to the book Red Mafia, How the Russian Mob Has Invaded America by Robert Friedman. This book is possibly the most revealing documentary about the true Jewish nature of the so-called Russian Mafia. The author names the Jews involved and states explicitly that they are Jews. This book also traces the spread of this Talmudically sanctioned Jewish crime syndicate to America. This valuable text can be ordered from your friendly neighborhood Jewish bookstore or from the good folks at natvan.com. Yes, the Jews are indeed confident. They are confident that they have weakened our minds so sufficiently with the Christian cancer that we will forever forgive our enemies and resist not the injustices perpetrated against our people. Let's prove them wrong. Let's tell our people about the white slave trade in Israel. An excellent link on this subject can be found at www.wcotc.com/Jews/. I am calling on creators and white people of conscience to post this link on major message boards. Let's make posting this link of Jewish atrocities against our people a vital part of Operation Internet Blitzkrieg. For an article discussing this ongoing Internet information war, see the following link at creator.org/internet.html. Let me give the full address on that to make sure that's very clear. http://creator.org/internet.html. The inevitable argument one will encounter when debating anti-whites on this issue is the issue of collective guilt. You can't blame all Jews for the white slave trade in Israel, they will say. Consider this. If there is a movement among Jews anywhere to boycott Israel due to the white slave trade, I have not yet heard of it. If there is any major media campaign urging Jews to stop supporting Israel, I have not heard of it, nor are you ever likely to. The Jews, despite internal differences, are a collective unit. Since they act as such, they must be approached and discussed as such. Were not white people urged by the Jew media to boycott South Africa during apartheid? Yet somehow the same logic doesn't apply to Jews. If only an individual may be held accountable for the grievous acts against the host race and culture, then the group is free to continue assaults on the host race and culture. We witnessed this throughout the 20th century. While the Italian community harbored mobsters working like a cancer on city and state governments because of the code of silence, as they called it. In this manner, the ethnic group's protection of its own bad individuals goes unpunished. Are the Jews raping for profit white women in other jog lands and even right here in America? You'd better believe it. An article entitled, Russian Sex Slavery Epidemic in U.S. from the Internet March 23-29 St. Petersburg Times attests to this fact. The article is written by Charles Digges, and I will now quote from it. Quote, Brooklyn, New York. Somewhere beyond the smoky spotlights at a go-go club on Coney Island Boulevard, waiting for her next routine, Marina, a raven-haired 23-year-old native of Moscow, adjusts her G-string and calculates the money she'll make tonight. It's brutally precise math she has learned while working for almost 2 years as a sexual slave after answering a vague yet intriguing ad she found in a Moscow newspaper. Earn thousands of dollars a month working abroad in a dance troupe, the ad had read. A month and a half after calling the phone number, Marina was living in a run-down Brooklyn apartment with 12 women, 4 beds, barred windows, and almost daily beatings. After a year and a half of that, Marina was sold for $1,000 last month to new agents. Marina is one of a half million women annually lured annually lured, duped, or kidnapped into the $7 billion worldwide flesh trade, one in which the new Russian traders are more and more channeling their chattel to the United States, unquote. Keep in mind, brothers and sisters, that these women resort to employment outside of their native countries mainly because they are poor. Educated white racial loyalists know that the economies of the countries of the former USSR were destroyed by Jewish communists and their white trader lackeys, and are now being further looted by the same. Jews have used and continue to use any and all means at their disposal to loot the nations of their wealth. You may have also noticed in the article just quoted the term Russian traders. Again, no mention of the fact that the so-called Russian Mafia is indeed Jewish, as clearly stated and elaborated upon in the book Red Mafia, How the Russian Mob Has Invaded America, by author Robert Friedman. In that same text, the author reveals that, quote, in general, state and federal law enforcement agencies were loath to go after Russian mobsters, instead devoting their energies to bagging Italian wise guys. And because the Russian mob was mostly Jewish, it was a political hot potato, especially in the New York area, unquote. Friedman even points out that such so-called respectable, tolerant Jewish organizations such as the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith actually pressured police agencies to take it easy on their kinsmen in the Jewish crime gangs. These respectable, so-called Jewish organizations claimed that any publicity associated with investigations or arrests would foster anti-Semitism and lead the Gentile public to protest against the continued influx of Jewish gangsters into the United States from the Soviet Union as refugees. Of course, we need actually more anti-Semitism. If the people knew about all this, of course, anti-Semitism would inevitably rise, as it should. Even after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, however, Friedman writes, Jewish organizations continue to lobby the Justice Department to downplay the threat posed by the Russian mob. The Russian mafia has the lowest priority on the criminal pecking order, admitted FBI spokesman Joe Valiquette during a 1992 interview, unquote. So the Jews basically do whatever they want at the expense of white people, and even to point this fact out is considered anti-Semitism. Well, let's engage in more anti-Semitism and hear from another woman, another white slave. This girl's name is Irina. She, like so many others, tried to escape the poverty and hopelessness of village life in the Ukraine. She, too, was most likely brought up to worship Jews in one way or another. At first, Israel seemed to offer her a new world. Then, and I quote from the January 11, 1998, New York Times, quote, one morning, she was driven to a brothel where her boss burned her passport before her eyes. I own you, she recalled his saying. You are my property, and you will work until you earn your way out. Don't try to leave. You have no papers, and you don't speak Hebrew. You will be arrested and deported. Then we will get you and bring you back. Stunned and outraged by the sudden order to prostitute herself, she simply refused. She was beaten and raped before she succumbed. Finally, she got a break. The brothel was raided, and she was brought here to Nevatertsa in Ramallah, the only women's prison in Israel. Now, like hundreds of Ukrainian and Russian women with no documents or obvious forgeries, she is waiting to be sent home. I don't think the man who ruined my life will ever be fined. Or even be fined, I should say, she said softly, slow tears filling her enormous green eyes. You can call me a fool for coming here. That's my crime. I am stupid, a stupid girl from a little village. But can people really buy and sell women and get away with it? Sometimes I sit here and ask myself if that really happened to me, if it can really happen at all. Then, waving her arm toward the muddy prison yard, where Russian is spoken more commonly than Hebrew, she whispered one last thought. I'm not the only one, you know. They have ruined us all. In Tropicana, in Tel Aviv's bustling business district, is one of the busiest bordellos. The women who work there, like nearly all prostitutes in Israel today, are Russian. Their boss, however, is not. Israelis love Russian girls, said Jacob Golan, who owns this and two other clubs and spoke willingly about the business he finds so successful. They are blonde and good-looking and different from us, he said, chuckling as he drew his hand over his black hair, and they are desperate. They are ready to do anything for money. Always filled with half-naked Russian women, the club is open around the clock. There is a schedule on the wall next to the receptionist, with each woman's hours listed in a different color, and the days and shifts rotating, as at a restaurant or a bar. Next to the schedule, a sign reads, "We don't accept checks." Next to that, there is a poster for a missing Israeli woman. There are 12 cubicles at the Tropicana, where 20 women work in shifts, 8 during the daytime, 12 at night. Business is always booming, and not just with foreign workers. Israeli soldiers frequent the place, as do business executives and tourists. Mr. Golan was asked if most women who work at the club do so voluntarily. He laughed heartily. "I don't get into that," he said, staring vacantly across his club at 4 Russian women sitting on a low couch. "They are brought here and told to work. I don't force them. I pay them. What goes on between them and the men they are with, how could that be my problem?" Every once in a while, usually with great fanfare and plenty of advance notice, Golan gets raided. He pays a fine, and the women without good false documents are taken to prison. If they are deported, the charges against them are dropped. But if a woman wants to file a complaint, then she must remain in prison until a trial is held. In the past 4 years, Betty Lahan, prison director, said, "I don't know of a single case where a woman chose to testify." It is not clear who will stop the mob. On a trip to Ukraine late last year, Hillary Rodham Clinton spoke out about the new slave trade that has developed so rapidly there. The U.S. and EU have plans to work together to educate young women about the dangers of working abroad. Other initiatives, like stays of deportation for prisoners, victim shelters, and counseling have also been discussed. "I don't care about any of that," said Lena, a young Latvian, one of the inmates waiting to be deported here. "I just want to know one thing. How will I ever walk down the street like a human being again?" The perceptive listeners probably noticed that Hillary's cures to the problem do not include any criticism of Israel or international Jewry. Basically, she said that it's the women's fault for not being educated. Not being educated about what, Hillary? Yes, it is true that these women were not educated properly. They were most likely never taught about the Jews and how they treat non-Jews when they can get away with doing what they like. These women were never taught the lessons of nature, history, and common sense. White people of the world need to stop relying on a mythical savior who is nothing more than one of many historical mythical saviors. Brothers and sisters, we must all realize that we are one extended family and that we should all unify under one common creed. That creed is creativity. Our founder, Ben Clausen, himself was a victim of Jewish communism. He recognized the Jewish threat to our people. Order your copy of the greatest book ever written, Ben Clausen's Nature's Eternal Religion, for $10 postpaid. Send to P.O. Box 2002, East Peoria, Illinois, 61611, USA. In that book, he gives the full story of the Jewish cancer upon this society, upon all white societies. Do your part to get the word out about the Jewish-run white slave trade in Israel and other Jew-occupied countries, including these United States of America. Remember to listen to this broadcast again and again. Arm yourself with the facts, then post this info on major message boards. Our beautiful white sisters, as well as all white people everywhere, are depending on nature's finest to lead the way. This program was, of course, sponsored once again by the World Church of the Creator, and I wish at this time to give my commendations to Son of Thunder, who produced this radio script for me to read to you this evening. I am interested in further scripts to be provided. There is much information out there. As you well know, I keep very busy myself. I am fighting on a number of fronts, on the legal front. Certainly my duties as Pontifex Maximus keep me very occupied. So if you have a particular subject that you would like to have covered on this program, by all means, consider writing up a script, and I will be more than happy to review it. And if I like it, as the odds are pretty good that I would be happy to read it on this program. My email address is pmhale1@aol.com. Our address again is P.O. Box 2002, East Peoria, Illinois, 61611. Well, this will do it for this week's program. I thank you for listening. Continue to spread the truth to the people, come what may, and together we will win this racial holy war. Rahoa!